Let us welcome Radha Naswami. Thank you so much, Maharaj. Thank you so much, Maharaj, for coming.
You are here. Initiation. My friend.
For those who don't know, Radhanand Swami is the founder of this project, Bhakti Center. He comes every year for a very short period of time, and we are very grateful for him finding time for this beautiful evening program. So Maharaj will be speaking about the six obstacles on the path of love, and we will have in the end of our program question-answer sessions. And if you would like to purchase his books, we have a bookstall in the back of this room, and I hope he will kindly sign it for you.
Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vasravyadesha Dharine Vanshata Rupata Rubyascha Kripa Singhubya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudhi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
This is a very special event for me because I try to visit Russia or Ukraine every year, and this year I will not be able to come because someone is taking me to Australia instead. So I was feeling very sad, but now I am with you today, so everything is all right. Last year I had the fortune of visiting Lithuania, Latvia, St. Petersburg, and Moscow. When I was there, St. Petersburg, such a beautiful temple, and so many I don't know how many people, but it looked like thousands, maybe it was hundreds. In Moscow, thousands of people coming. And in Lithuania, there was public programs and big auditoriums. In Latvia also. And when I was seeing so many thousands of people with such open hearts, such sincere spiritual desire, I was remembering when Srila Prabhupada first came to Moscow. Do you all know that story? Just about 2 weeks ago, I was with Shyam Sundar, who was Srila Prabhupada's secretary at that time. And he's told me many times. And can everyone hear? Because of the way the seating is, I can only see. Shyam Sundar is writing a book. He has done a tremendous years of research in the background and the history of the incidents that he is writing about. Because he started the temple with a few others for Srila Prabhupada in San Francisco, and then in London. And I believe it was around 1971, Srila Prabhupada was really eager to go to Moscow. He was writing to a Professor Katowski at one educational institution in Moscow. And somehow this professor offered Srila Prabhupada an invitation to come. And this was in 1971, so there was a lot of restrictions. And he could not get a visa. But he asked Shyam Sundar in Mumbai, please try to get me a visa. And Shyam Sundar is American. And in 1971, America and Russia politically were not very friendly. But Shyam Sundar was so enthusiastic, he not only got visa for Prabhupada that day, but visa for himself also to go with him. And when they went, Srila Prabhupada was only allowed to speak at Professor Katowski. He was only allowed to have an interview with Professor Katowski. There was no other opportunity for him to speak. But he told Shyam Sundar that he was staying, I think it's the National Hotel, and he was in one of the hotels in downtown Moscow. And he had a little room, and everything was very monitored. And he was not given any opportunity to speak anywhere except to the professor and a few academic people. And Srila Prabhupada told Shyam Sundar that the people of Russia, he said, they are very open-hearted people. They're very sincere. And soon there will be the tens and thousands of people coming to Krishna here. Shyam Sundar was wondering, how is that possible? We're not even allowed to speak to anyone. And and then Srila Prabhupada sent Shyamasundar to go and try to find some vegetables. So he was walking and walking and walking, and one young Russian man and his friend, who was actually from the son of someone from the Indian embassy, they came to Shyamasundar and asked if he was from America. And he said yes. And they asked if he had any blue jeans or or rock and roll music, something like that. And he said, no, but I have a guru. Would you like to meet him? So they were enthusiastic. So he brought them to Prabhupada's room. And for the next, I think, 3 days, all day, every day, Srila Prabhupada was teaching this one boy who later became Ananta Shanti Prabhu, and blessed him to spread this culture of bhakti or devotion. Shyamasundar writes about it in great details in this book, and it's going to be released hopefully this year. And Bhaktivedanta Goswami Maharaj in Moscow is already arranging it being translated in Russian language also. And of course, 50 years ago, when Srila Prabhupada came to America, he really had even less support than he had in Russia. At least he had somebody with him. When he came to America, he was all alone. He came on a cargo ship, 1965. And there was complete freedom for him to go anywhere he wanted, and freedom to speak whatever he wanted. But it took about almost a year till people took interest. And when people did start taking interest, it became like a spiritual explosion. And it happened right on this block. Just across the block, and this is First Avenue and Second Avenue, in a little storefront, Srila Prabhupada. He established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And I recently heard a lecture that he gave in India, where he was remembering those days. He said the only way he had to live was in selling the books that he brought from India. He wrote Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, which is three volumes. Was published in New Delhi. In those books, Srila Prabhupada explained he had 200 sets, and he said, I was without friend, without means, without any money. He was wandering here and there, trying to give this message of love for Krishna, love for God. And in almost a year, he managed to collect about $200. He was living with one person, and that person kind of went crazy and threatened his life. So Srila Prabhupada he had no home. He had nothing. And who is now Mukunda Maharaj, at that time he was Michael, and Janaki was Jane or Jan. they tried to help him in whatever way they could. And Srila Prabhupada explained, he found this storefront on 2nd Avenue. The storefront cost $175 a month. And the apartment behind the storefront was $75 a month. And Srila Prabhupada had $200. It took him almost a year to collect it. So he put all his $200 down. And the next month, to stay there, he would have to give another $200. And where was he going to get it? How is it possible? He had faith. He had faith in the will of Krishna. And from that very humble beginning, now there are over 500 centers, I believe, all over the world. Over 1 million devotees. And so many wonderful projects. One of the most special things is that during this year of the 50th anniversary, we can remember, recall, and share with each other memories of how from a tiny little seed of one man's deep, sincere compassion manifested in such a way to affect so many people's lives and so much of the world. Srila Prabhupada's message was very simple. That originally we are all Krishna conscious or God conscious. We are the eternal soul. Ajayate mriyate vakavachat. The nature of the living force within us is eternal, full of knowledge, and full of happiness. We are not this body. We are in this body. We are in this mind. The body is temporary. It's born, it grows, it sustains itself for some time. It may produce offspring. And then it gradually gets dwindled. It dwindles. It gets old. It gets diseased. And it dies. And it happens so fast. My father is 92. And he can't remember so much what happened yesterday. But he has such incredible clear memories of when he was 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old. That was 80 years ago. And he said, it seems just like yesterday. Time goes so fast. Death is a certainty. The greatness of life, the enlightened beings have taught us, is not just how many years we can keep this body alive, but what we accomplish within the years that we're here. Quantity of life is nice, but the quality of life is what is truly important. Srimad Bhagavatam tells that there are trees that live very long time. I read about a particular tree that is in Sweden that's 9,200 years old. According to scientific research, it's the oldest tree in the world. That means one soul has been in that body for 9,200 years. And it's living way up in northern Sweden. So most of the year it's covered with snow. It's probably not a very happy tree. And that's nice. But we see so many great people who may not have lived very long, but what did they accomplish with the years that they lived? Ayur Harati Vaipungsan, that with every rising and setting of the sun, we are all one day closer to death, materially. But for those who use their life to develop an attraction for God, for Krishna, that with every rising of the setting and setting of the sun, we become one day closer to eternal life. And that's the choice that each and every one of us has, especially as human beings. We have the choice to utilize our time in such a way that whether materially we are successful or whether we're not successful, which each day we're coming closer to the end of this body, what we call death. But if we integrate our life in with a spiritual direction, under true spiritual guidance, then with every rising and the setting of the sun, we can be very happy to know that we're one day closer to eternal life, to realizing the true quality of the soul. The ananda, the happiness that is inherent within the soul, is the ananda of experiencing the infinite, limitless love of our source, of the cause of all causes, sarva karana karanam, or who we may call God, or Krishna, who has many names, the source of all living beings, the mother, the father of all living entities, the cause of the whole creation, and the ultimate goal of life, to feel the infinite love of God. Just like when the sun shines on a dirty mirror, what happens? There's practically no reflection. It's just dirt. But when the sun shines on a clean mirror, that sun reflects in all directions. So when our mind is dirty, when our natural consciousness, the soul, is covered, and even though God's love is shining on all of us forever, we don't really reciprocate with that love. We can't reflect that love. But through yoga, through religion, through spiritual practice, we purify our hearts so that we can purely reflect the light, the joy of that love in whatever we do, wherever we may be. So this is our original nature, to be happy. To be happy in loving Krishna and feeling Krishna's love and reflecting that love, sharing that love through our occupation, through our body, through our minds, through our words, through our interactions with others. A simple path that is very much presented in the Vedic literature for cleaning that dirt and from the mirror of our mind, so we can actually reflect the true nature of the self. This chanting God's days. And living with integrity, with character, in such a way that we're no longer putting dirt on the mirror of our mind. What is that dirt? Selfish passion or lust? Where does that come from? Why are people so obsessed with enjoying selfish passions? Because the nature of the soul is ananda. It's full of bliss. And when we forget the bliss that's inherent within ourself, then the mind, disconnected from the very nature of the soul, is looking for happiness somewhere. You can't live without happiness. You can't live without the search for pleasure. Whether we're little reptiles or snakes or insects or animals or humans, everyone's looking for pleasure. Why? Because it's our nature. If we don't find it within ourselves where our real pleasure is, we're going to look for it outside of ourselves. And great spiritual teachers, and Krishna himself through his many avatars, teaches us how to find what's within us outside of ourselves. It's like this beautiful mantra of God's names. It's a sound that we could hear with our ears. It's music we could dance with our bodies. But it awakens the love within us. With our eyes, the deity in the temple, we're actually seeing the Lord within our heart, even through our eyes. We're looking externally and seeing what's within. Concept of seva or service. When we're looking for the opportunity to serve some siddhir haritoshanam, to please the Lord, then we're actually seeing Krishna in that service. Prasad. Prasad, spiritual food. When food is offered to God with devotion and we honor it and appreciate it, we're actually experiencing the love within ourself. It's awakening with what we taste with our mouth and our tongue. In this way, the science of bhakti, the science of Sanatana Dharma, is in the external world. We don't see it disconnected from our own inherent true spiritual nature. We learn to see Krishna through the energy of creation. But that's only possible when we have the mood of seva. Service. Devotional service. Otherwise, we're looking for that pleasure externally in this world through so many types of enjoyment. But it never satisfies us. And I, in my little life, in my traveling around for the past 65 years, I have seen billionaires, millionaires, struggling middle class, homeless, simple villagers. Everybody has problems. Everybody's suffering. Happiness is not what we have as far as things. Happiness is how we have learned to love and how we have learned to experience love in whatever situation we're in. Yesterday we were speaking about a great devotee named Sridhar. And he was explaining that in his years, he has seen the king, who lives in royal palace, who's wearing ornaments, jewel crowns, and very costly garments, who's eating finest foods on silver and gold plates. And then he sees a bird. The bird lives in a little nest of dried twigs. It's just eating whatever little berries or leaves are around. And he wears the same old feathers every day. But he said, as far as I can see, I don't see much difference between the king and the bird. They both have some pleasures. And they both have some pains, and they're both struggling in their own ways, and they're both just passing the time of their lives dealing with those things. So what's really important in life? Just grasping for things to try to enjoy. Bhagavad Gita tells that kama, or the sensual lust desires, they are like fire. And the more you put fuel on fire, the hotter it blazes. It may be for fame, it may be for power, it may be for acquisition of property and money, it may be for sexual pleasures. It could take the form in so many ways, but they come and they go. They give no pleasure to the soul. They just give some reflection of tiny little pleasures to the body and mind, and they are gone. But happiness is when we understand the needs of the soul. That's who we are. And when we're dissatisfied because things don't get our way, then we become very angry. Anger could really put our life in such a difficult direction. One moment of letting anger get uncontrolled can disrupt our whole life, can disrupt our whole family, can disrupt a society sometimes. And greed. Here in New York, and in every part of the world, we have seen the nature of greed. People who have so much, but they just have to have more. They can't give up what they have. They have to have more and more. Some years ago in Wall Street, people who were millionaires and billionaires, they were cheating their own employees who made them rich and putting them in poverty so that they could make more. And eventually they ended up in jail, some of them. So what is this greed? It can never give any satisfaction to the true self. Then there's envy. Envy, jealousy, such a powerful force. When somebody has something and we feel very unhappy that they have it, when they have something good, somebody has more money than us or more beauty than us or more skill than us or more popularity than us, and we feel unhappy about that, that's called envy. We want to see the dark sides of people. And then there's arrogance. The arrogance where I just feel this insatiable need, where I have to feel myself superior to others. I have to prove to myself and I have to prove to others how great I am. But no matter how much we do that, we become more and more agitated and disturbed because the nature of this world is there's always going to be confrontations to our ego. And illusion. Lust, anger, envy, greed, arrogance, and illusion. These six are the greatest impediments to happiness. Why? Because they're like that dirt and dust that cover the mirror of the mind. Cover our true nature. The love, the compassion, the peace, the joy that's within us. And how to overcome those things. Srila Prabhupada explained another analogy that when a drop of water falls from a cloud, it's transparent and clear. But when that same water falls onto the earth, it becomes muddy and loses its transparency. But when you filter the water, you bring it back to its natural quality, and it becomes clear. So this chanting of God's names, this associating with people who inspire us with the true goal and true values of life, help to bring our consciousness back to its clear natural state. Three principles we love to emphasize are so important to overcome these obstacles that are on our path. Satsang, sadhana, and sadachar. Satsang means to associate with people who really inspire us toward the true goal of life, toward what will really bring us happiness. People who remind us of what's important. Sat means good. Satsang means association with good people. There's a beautiful verse, Mahat Sevam Dwaram Ahurabha Muktes Tamo Dwaram Yoshika Samadhisanka. This is a principle that's universal. That who we associate with, we become affected. If you put an iron rod in fire and leave it there long enough, then the iron rod will take on the qualities of fire. It becomes red and hot. And if you say, well, it's still an iron rod, my Guru Prabhupada said, he said, challenge that person to touch it. Touch it. You get burnt. Just like putting your finger directly in fire. There's no difference. If you put the same iron rod in ice, then it's going to become cold as ice. And if you touch it, it becomes, it's like touching ice. This is the principle of how the world has been engineered. What we associate with will become. When we associate with saintly people, we have the opportunity of becoming saintly. When we associate with like-minded people who help each other to overcome the obstacles that interfere with our true spiritual enlightenment, then we get such strength. We keep such focus. We get the right understandings of how to see every situation so we can progress rather than being distracted. There is a simple analogy I spoke just a few days ago of a crane. A crane is a bird. white feathers, very long pointed beak, and long legs. And the crane stands in a stream of water looking down, and he watches. So many fish are swimming by, little fish, 10 fish, 20 fish, 30 fish, 100 fish, 200 fish, 1,000 fish. He's just watching, letting the fish pass, the little fish. And as soon as a big fish comes, he eats it. I don't eat fish. That's why I didn't make a very good sound. But cranes eat fish. The principle of the story is to teach us we shouldn't be distracted by little things in life. There's so many distractions, there's so many obstacles. And they seem so significant when we're not focused on something higher. That's why it's very important to associate with people who help keep us focused on the higher things of life, the higher goals of life. A little grain of sand can look like a giant mountain. Little things can be so disturbing to us. How many of you have had that experience? Just a little thought, and we become so disturbed. Somebody just says something, and we know in 10 years we're not even going to remember it, but it disturbs us so much now. Some little temptation that's before our senses, something that attracts our mind, and we become so attracted to it, we become so obsessed to get it. But it's such a stupid little thing. But it seems so big. Fear. Sometimes we become afraid of so many little things. Grains of sand look like mountains. But when we keep our mind focused on the real mountain of the opportunity for self-realization, the opportunity for enlightenment, for seva, for loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord, which is what's really important in our life, to overcome birth and death. The highest liberation is available to us every moment. Always. When we understand that value and keep focused on it, then we see all the little grains of sand for what they are, and we deal with them. The little fish pass, and we see them as little fish, and we deal with them and let them pass. Because they know they're going to become, they're coming, they're going, they're coming, they're going, they're coming and going. We keep our mind in what's really, truly the higher values and purposes of life. That's really important. I remember my mother and father. They taught me these things when I was a little boy, but I didn't understand them. I didn't even believe them. But when I started my spiritual search, I started thinking, yes, I remember that. My father, he was brought up in America during the Great Depression. Actually, his father came from Lithuania. He was born and raised in Lithuania. And my grandmother was from Russia. And my other two grandparents were from Romania and Poland. But they were all from that part of the world. But especially my grandfather, he escaped because the Tsar of Russia, who controlled Lithuania, was going to send him to
to Siberia to just work for the rest of his life. So he escaped because he was from a minority religion. And he came to America and didn't have any money and didn't speak a word of English. So he lived in poverty, but he just started selling potatoes and stuff, somehow tried to live. Got married. My father was born. My father had to leave school when he was 15 to work full time just to help, just to give enough food for the family. This is America. It's the way it was for most everybody in those days. It was the Depression. And when I was young, he was always working really hard, just for somehow or other, so that we could survive. And then he invested everything he had and got all kinds of loans and started a business and went into total bankruptcy. He lost everything along with his brother and his father too. They all were together and they lost everything. And then he was working and working and working. And my mother was just trying to, three sons trying to take care of us. And my father was out trying to get some money so that we could stay in our little house. And I remember my father used to say, you know, making money and having all these things are not really important. What's important is the love we share with each other. That's the only thing that's really important in our life. And I said, then why are you always working for money? He said, because we have to do that too. He said, we have to do that. But what's really important is the love we share. And my mother taught the same thing. If you gave her a pearl necklace or you gave her a little flower, she would be equally happy. It's not the thing that gives happiness to the heart. It's the love in which it's given. And later on in my life, I really learned that the source of that love is in God's love, in Krishna. That's what's really important. But we become so distracted by all the little things of this world. I recently heard Prabhupada, my guru, on a tape. He said that during the British control of India, a British lord who was a governor in India, he said to his guru, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, how is it possible that you have a spiritual daily newspaper? Because he actually had about 12 publications, and one of them was a daily newspaper. He said, how could you have a daily newspaper of spiritual subjects? Don't you run out of things to say? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada said, this universe is just a little tiny speck in the cosmic manifestation. And this earth planet is just a little speck in the universe. And Calcutta, the city we're living in, is just a little speck in this earth planet. Calcutta has 5 daily newspapers. And almost every city in the world has so many daily newspapers. And it's just talking about the news that's happening in their little city and in this little world. He said, our newspaper is speaking the news of the spiritual world. That we can have a full news, we can have hundreds and thousands of newspapers every day and never run out of things to say.
But
the problem is no one wants to read it. Everyone's so distracted by the things of this world. Grain. It's really important that we focus on what's really important in our life. And to integrate that in every aspect of our life. And in order to do that, satsang is so necessary, to associate with people who help us to remain focused. Drug addicts and alcoholics, when they go to Alcoholics Anonymous, they realize how much they need each other to not be distracted by these habits that they've had in the past and keep themselves focused by remaining sober and keeping in the right direction. So this is what this little bhakti center that we're visiting, this is what it's for, to give people a chance to associate with like-minded people who are really seeking a very meaningful, fulfilling, spiritually oriented life. A life of receiving God's love and sharing God's love. A place where we could be with like-minded people who are aspiring and helping each other to remain focused on the big issues of life. And sadhana, the second principle, is when we have that inspiration, we have that direction, and we put time aside every day for our spiritual practice. To hear Sravanam, to read Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, such spiritual books that really nourish our intelligence with grace, give us a philosophical direction in life, a meaningful outlook of the whole world. Kirtanam, meditation, the simplest and according to Vedic literature, the most powerful of all meditations is meditating on God's names, these beautiful mantras. Mantra means to purify the mind, to deliver the mind from all of the anxieties and the sufferings and the distractions that are there. To cleanse the mind of the lust and anger and envy and greed and arrogance and illusion. To let the pure nature of the love of the soul shine through the mind and give light to the world. So we chant God's names in our japa mala, on our beads. We chant God's names singing together in kirtan. We chant God's names in whatever we're doing in our life. We can remember. It's such a simple, accessible way of always being connected. And sadachar means character. To live with dignity. To live with morality. To live in a spirit of service rather than a spirit of exploiting others. To live with compassion rather than indifference. This is character. And through these simple practices, together, we can help each other to really joyfully overcome obstacles and uncover the treasure that's within all of us. Srila Prabhupada, in that little storefront across on the other side of the block, he saw the beautiful potential within every heart to find this happiness. When Srila Prabhupada was walking through Red Square in Moscow, it was pretty cold when he was there. He was looking around and he was seeing that potential.
in everyone the potential to be happy. Not just fleeting happiness, but true happiness in the light of God's love. And when Srila Prabhupada was, when he was in Africa, he went to Nairobi, Kenya, he saw that potential in everyone. And when he was in Europe, in London, I remember Shyam Sundar told me, when Prabhupada was living in Calcutta as a little boy under British rule, they were promoting London is so great. They were talking about the mighty River Thames, the river that flows by the Westminster Palace, the Parliament of London. And when Prabhupada went on a bridge over the Thames, the devotee showed him, this is the river. And he laughed. He said, it's such a tiny little river. I thought it was gigantic. It doesn't compare to the Ganges. But he saw the potential in everyone, wherever he was. Whether he was speaking to billionaires in Bombay, little villagers in Bengal, he saw the potential in everyone. And that potential is in all of us. To find it in ourselves, to see it in each other. It's truly the greatest opportunity we all have. Thank you very much. Is that what I was supposed to talk about? Did you hear what he said? He said that the topic was completely covered. That could mean many different things. Covered means it was completely forgotten. Covered means it was fulfilled. So I will let you decide which one. Anyone like to ask any questions? Yes.
My question is, why Krishna? As I understood from Bhagavad Gita and your book, that God has many forms and personalities, and Krishna is one of them, and those forms correspond to time and people who perceive God. So why Krishna is the choice that you and Bhagavad Gita and many other sources reference to the kind of choice to follow and be opposite?
Why Krishna?
It's something I'm trying to understand but couldn't find the answer.
Oh, there are many answers. Did you all hear her question?
No.
What is your name?
Anastasia.
Anastasia asked, why Krishna? If there's so many aspects of God, why Krishna? Yes, and she's speaking in Bhagavad Gita, how Krishna tells her so many forms and names of God. In the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. That the Supreme Lord appears in many forms with many names throughout history. Every great religion in the world is established by an avatar or a particular incarnation of the same one God. Eka bahunam yogadadatikam. Nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yogadadatikam. That there's one eternal being
And there's also limitless eternal beings. And the one eternal being is the source of all others. And all the limitless eternal beings are forever subordinate to the one eternal being. So we are limitless eternal beings. And that one eternal being, who we call Bhagavan, Parabrahman, Allah, Jehovah, Ram, Govinda, Krishna, God, has many names. Just like the sun planet, can anyone live if the sun goes out? What if the sun decided to go to sleep and just turned off its light for 8 hours to sleep? What would happen in that 8 hours if the sun just turned off its light? Okay, switch it. All life would end in the entire universe. Yes? We're totally dependent on the light of the sun. And the sun rises in Germany, the sun rises in Moscow, the sun rises in Mumbai, the sun rises in New York. And in each place there's a different name for the sun. Sol, Surya, sun. But it's the same sun. So there's one God. And that one God has appeared in many ways and many times. And in every religion, people approach that one God and try to surrender to the will of that one God. And ultimately to love that one God and to serve that one God and to see every living being as the children of that one. So that's the principle of Bhagavad Gita. That's the principle of all the great scriptures of the world and all the great spiritual paths. So why Krishna? The name Krishna means all-attractive. It's that original, complete manifestation of God in the sense of being all-attractive. Krishna, there was a British theologian, or I think he was actually a German theologian, and he came to India to try to understand, and he saw different aspects of God. He saw different aspects of God in the Middle East. He saw different aspects of God in Europe, Eastern Europe, Western Europe. He saw different aspects of God in India, and he came to a conclusion that Krishna's just enjoying, he's playing his flute, and he's just exchanging loving relationships. And that same God, you know, is creating and destroying and punishing and rewarding and all of that stuff. It's the same God, but as Krishna, he's simply enjoying and giving enjoyment. He's simply loving. In Vrindavan, Krishna's making himself totally accessible to be loved in the sweetest, most intimate ways. So that's why we want to love Krishna. Does that answer your question? To say anything in this regard? Anyone? Lalita Mundari Devi, are you still here? Would you like to speak something? Please speak something. Yes.
So along the lines of what God, what name you use or which God you think about, how about how culturally we term science into God, or find God through science, or find other ways of finding the truth. Or we fixate on things to find the truth. And if we have humility and we're fixated on the truth, is that the same as finding God, even if you don't say you believe in God?
You are very sweetly complex. We can, through science, through logic, through philosophy, through technology, through exploration of the universe in various ways, we could gradually come to conclusions that bring us closer to that source of everything that exists, or who we call God. I believe it was Albert Einstein, who was a very great scientist, genius. He created formulas and theses that practically all the technology that we know of is built upon. You know, he explored the universe in such ways that certain principles that he didn't invent, he discovered, is what so much of our science and technology is built on. Mathematics. Concept of science and mathematics, physics. But Albert Einstein, you know, his conclusion was that mathematically, from any perspective of science, it's impossible for the universe to be what it is without a supreme intelligence behind it. And what does supreme intelligence mean? Means God. Things cannot be the way they are by accident. Mathematically, it's impossible. There must be an intelligence, a divine power that is organizing things. Isaac Newton was the founder of one of the founders of Western science. And he was a religious man. His idea was not to challenge whether God exists or not, but to explore the incredible, inconceivable glories of God through understanding how he's created this place. It's amazing. It's unbelievable. Just like if you people have these cellular phones now? How many of you have cellular phone? What kind of cellular phone do you have? Huh?
Good one.
Yeah, good.
Okay, well, let us say an Apple. What are they called?
iPhone.
Okay. So you have an iPhone. Now, if you don't have an iPhone, whatever.
Android phone.
Yeah, whatever you're just... It's quite incredible. I mean, it's really incredible. You just press a button, and here I am sitting here at 25 First Avenue on the Lower East Side of New York, and I press a button, and within seconds I'm talking to and seeing live somebody in Singapore, because I have to call him right after this talk. I'm just going to press a button, and within seconds, I'm going to be talking to and seeing somebody in Singapore. How does that work? It's quite incredible. I remember when cell phones first came out, I didn't have, I resisted getting one for many years because I thought they were too much disturbance. Life is so simple without it. And I was on a landline, and I called my father. I thought he was home. I thought he was just, landline. I called his landline at home. He had his landline connected to his cell phone. So we talked for about 10 minutes. I was in India. He's in Chicago. And he said, "Do you know where I am?" I said, "You're home, aren't you?" He said, "No. I'm sitting on a toilet in the ninth hole of a golf course." I didn't say anything. But I was thinking, what technology is quite incredible. But to come up with such a technology, it didn't happen by accident. It sounds like confirmation of what I'm saying. Somebody's cell phone is agreeing with me. When you have your Apple iPhone, you do it and you think the Apple company made this. You don't think that it just came, it happened. It was made. So in the same way, science from a spiritual perspective is beautiful because we can understand the incredible, intricate glory of God's genius. Every molecule, every atomic particle is unique. We were discussing this a couple days ago. There's no two particles that are identical. There's no two snowflakes that have ever fallen that are identical. Everything is so unique. Every grain of sand is different than every other grain of sand that ever existed, if you look at it close enough. Not to speak of all the variegatedness of people and how it's all working together, how the planets are floating and the sun is shining. It's incredible. One time Srila Prabhupada was walking on the Pacific Ocean seashore, and it was a beautiful sunset. And the people walking with Prabhupada, our guru, was saying, "Isn't it a beautiful sunset?" And Srila Prabhupada, he had his little cane, he was walking, and he stopped, and he smiled, and he looked at the sunset. And then he took his cane and kind of swept it across the sunset and said, "If you think the art is beautiful, you should see the artist." So when we understand that there is such an artist, there is such a source of everything, there is such a divine intelligence, Achintya, who's inconceivable, and we can also understand that that supreme intelligence has the power and the will to come down to this earth to explain himself to us, who he is, who we are, how to live in this creation and get the purpose of why the creation is here. So we can learn so many lessons through science and logic and philosophy that bring us to the conclusion that yes, there is a cause of all causes. Is something coming from nothing, or is something coming from something? Is everything in existence coming from nothing, or is everything in existence coming from something? This is a serious question. If everything is coming from nothing, there's no evidence of that. And it completely contradicts all of our experiences. But if everything is coming from something, that something is God. is the absolute truth, is Bhagavan. And that Bhagavan comes to this world to reveal himself to us, to teach us who we are, what real happiness is, how to know him, how to love him, how to share that love with each other and love each other. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's my answer. Thank you. Is there any other question?
Talking about the science you just mentioned, I remember in your book you were saying that you've seen in India people who were doing something that is not could not be explained by the science, like levitation or something like that. Talking about the same Isaac Newton who had the gravitation law. And you've seen people who break that law, that they can lift themselves up in spite of these laws. So which is the true essence of knowledge? Is it in these people or in the science?
In loving God.
because
there's not much difference between what they do and what science does. They just do it a different way. Yes?
Yes, but what is the truth?
Because, you know, you...
What they do or what science does?
They can chant a mantra and rise up.
How does
science can give an airplane and make you rise up.
Right. But how do you feel it? How do you understand it? Why does it happen? Why not everybody can? Or everybody can do it?
Science, why can't everyone invent a cellular phone? Because they don't know how.
Right.
So why can't everyone levitate or produce things by chanting a mantra?
Right.
Because they don't know how. If you learn how, you can produce a cell phone, and if you learn how, you can levitate. One is science of adjusting the gross energy molecules and atoms and all of that. And one is adjusting the subtle energies of the mind, intelligence, and the ego. And the mystic yogis, they learn how to adjust the matter, gross matter, through subtle matter.
It's amazing.
And scientists learn to adjust gross matter through subtler matter, but not subtle matter, subtle gross matter.
But did they learn it from somewhere, from some source, or it just came?
All the scientists are learning it from previous scientists, and they're going deeper and deeper and deeper. And similar, the yogis learn it from the Yoga Sutras. The Yoga Sutras teach us how to develop these powers. And other yogi gurus are like, you know, professors of these sciences. But you see, you can create atomic bombs, or you could create cell phones. or you can create on subtle levels the ability to perform these supernatural powers.
Right.
But at the same time, you could still be miserable. You could still be envious. You could still have so many unfulfilled desires and be greedy. Yes? Yogis could be like that. And scientists can be like that. And people who don't know any yoga or science could be like that. So the real purpose and the real thing that's beautiful is the opportunity to rise above the envy and the greed and the lust of our life. And that comes by actually coming in contact with the love of God. Does that answer your question?
Yes,
sir.
No, another question pops up. what kind of energy God used to create things. Mm. He didn't use science. He used probably another kind of magic.
God? Definitely another kind of energy. the energy of his supreme grace, his supreme will. But the reality is all science and all everything is included within that. It's not something separate. It's something. The concept of God includes all these other things. Yes.
You know, I've been sitting here and thinking, I have so many questions, and I got lost. Like, what exactly I would love to ask you. So I decided to ask you, like, the least appropriate question. And why it's the least appropriate question? Because here we are talking about having, like, superior mind, superior power that we call God, and his creation that we call ourselves. And I'd love to hear, like, your take on such a possibility that we actually all are the God.
All are what?
We are the God, each of us. And we come here over and over again to learn different aspects of ourselves, playing some sort of like hide-and-seek game with ourselves. Every time trying to achieve different goals, different tasks to develop ourselves. And there isn't such a thing like we are here and somewhere something is over there. But actually the whole thing is a sort of illusion. And there is, for each of us, is a different reality. Within, you know, like one reality within another, and it's infinite, inside and out, both ways. And, like, for example, right now, each of us is a, but is there God, at least like a speck of God, like a different, in a different dimension. And we are here to explore ourselves, to grow and to find ourselves. You know what I'm saying?
What is question?
The question is that though now I know that we are talking about the opposite concept, that there is the power, there is the God, and we are, and that is something that is superior, and there's the creation that is us, ourselves. So I wanted to hear your take, because, I mean, obviously you don't agree with what I just said, but I would love to hear what you think about such a possibility. Or maybe, since everything is duality, maybe you think that
okay,
it works
like
both ways.
I understand your question.
You don't?
I do.
Thank you.
I understand it because I used to think like that also. And I've heard so many philosophies and so many ideas and so many concepts and so many hypotheses in my life. So yes, I understand. But if we want to know the truth, it's important that we approach people who are actually enlightened. Because we can have so many concepts that sound fantastic, but do they really liberate us from the condition that we're in? And the idea that we're God, God does not fall under illusion.
the concept of Leela, where God wants to put himself in a situation to explore himself. Why would he helplessly suffer doing it? What does he have to achieve by going through misery and suffering and doing horrible things to other people?
To grow.
God doesn't have to grow. God's the source of everything that exists. We are a part of God.
But everything is... Everything is emotion.
If we were God, we would be the supreme controller. If you or me are God, if we're the... The definition of God means the supreme controller of all controllers. That's the definition of God. So if we're the supreme controller of all controllers, and we're exploring, and we're trying to grow, and we're being victimized by so many different things, and we're suffering, and people are abusing us, and we're abusing others, we could just say, okay, enough. But why we're still in it? Because we're not supreme controllers. I remember I was in a little house in Ohio once, and I was giving a class to 10 students. And one person was saying, I am God, I am God. What you are saying, that there's a God outside of me, I am God, I am the supreme controller. And he was like that. And after some time, he wanted to use the bathroom. And I... asked somebody to go in the bathroom and lock it. And went in the bathroom. And he was claiming, I'm God, I'm God, I'm the supreme controller. There's nothing outside of me. And he really had to go to the bathroom. I said, you're the supreme... And he was like screaming, let me in. And I said, if you're the supreme controller of all controllers, why can't you control your own bowels? Because you can't, because we're not God. We're a part of God. We can be godly. It's just so much fanciful talk that I'm God and I'm trying to find myself and I'm trying to grow. But if you're God, you don't have to go through suffering and you don't have to do terrible things. You may not do terrible things, but other people who are so-called God are doing terrible things. We're in illusion. God never falls in illusion, but we are in illusion. God comes to this world because he loves us in so many ways to teach us how to come out of that illusion. To be God is impossible, but we could be godly. We could realize that we're a part of God, just like a sun ray is a part of the sun. The sun ray cannot create the sun, but the sun can create the sun ray. And qualitatively, they're identical, full of light and full of heat. So we're like a sun ray. This is what the scriptures say. This is what the saints say. We're like that sun ray. We're godly. We have the same qualities of God, but God's not coming from us. We're coming from God. And we can forget, but God never forgets. God comes to this world out of love for us to remind us. Yes?
I wanted to ask you something. Where is the fine line between kindness and being strong? Because sometimes my decision can hurt somebody. And I don't know sometimes where is the truth between being strong and being kind to others. Sometimes it's impossible to make it both.
Yeah. I have that experience too. What is your name?
Christine.
Christine is saying, what is the fine line between being strong and being kind? Sometimes when we want to be kind, we hurt people. And sometimes if we're not strong, then we can be hurt by people. Something like that, yes?
Yeah, or I cannot move on without hurting somebody.
I cannot move on without hurting someone.
Yes.
That's, it's important that we have values. And we have a roadmap that can actually help to guide us in the direction that we want. And there's different levels of kindness. There's kindness to the body, there's kindness to the mind, there's kindness to the soul. Kindness to the body is to give food or medicine or shelter. Kindness to the mind is to give encouragement, appreciation, to empower persons to feel the value of their own self. And power of this, and kindness to the soul is helping people to really understand their eternal nature and to really help them understand and reconnect to that spiritual nature and to Krishna or to God. So when we have, when we understand truth, Krishna tells in Gita, Tadvidi pranipatina paritrashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninastattu darshana. If you want to understand the truth, then approach Guru and humble ourselves. That I don't know, I want to learn. And to offer service by following the instructions. Because a self-realized soul, one who has seen the truth can reveal the truth. And then Krishna tells what the truth is. Yajtekva napunaramoham evam yashashibandava yena bhutani yashashani draksasyat manyatomai. When you thus know the truth, you'll know that all living beings are in me, are of me, and are mine. So when we understand our own nature, our own spiritual nature, and we understand how every living being is of that same spiritual nature, we're all brothers and sisters in that way, and how all creation is the sacred energy of God, of the Lord, that's truth. And when we understand that world view, that self view, then our kindness is based on those truths. And even if we hurt someone unintentionally, that's, we still grow, we still make progress because, you know, our kindness is based on those inner truths. In one sense, if a person, I'll use a very, if a person addicted to cigarettes comes up to you on the streets and says, I need a cigarette, give me a cigarette. And you see he's suffering, and out of kindness you give him a cigarette. That's not a very deep type of kindness. You're not really helping him solve his problem. You're making his problem worse. Yes? So in this world, the deeper we have a connection to truth ourselves, the more we can understand what it really means to be kind. And then our kindness is on a very deeper level for the body, mind, and soul of others. And we actually know how to help others. I know a lady, she really wanted to help people medically. Yes? She really wanted to help people medically. Her parents died of certain diseases, and she wanted to help cure people of those diseases. So what did she do? She went to 8 years of medical school so that she could actually be kind to people in that way. But if somebody's dying of something and you just say, well, if you don't know how to help them, how can you help them? So if we really want to help people, we will really try to go deep into our own spiritual being, yes. We'll be with people who can help us to help, to be kind. We'll do sadhana so we can have that deeper connection so that we can really be kind. And then we can be kind in a very, very profound, deep, and effective way. And sometimes people may like it and some people may not like it, but we're not doing it for selfish purposes. If a doctor comes and says, you know, you have tuberculosis, you should take this medicine, you say, why are you criticizing me? He's trying to help you. He may not make you happy, but he's trying to help you. So even when we try to help people, we may not make them happy. But we have a deeper perspective of what it really means to be kind and what it really means to help people. Does that answer your question? Thank you. What is the time? I think we should end. It's 9 o'clock. So we should end now. But it's 9 o'clock, we have to end now.